Sirens. Sirens. Let's have a chat about them. Dom?
Yeah, so the Sirens, much like the Polyphemus, the Cyclops, these are sort of some of the classics, best-known characters in the story. These Sirens are they're female human-like beings with alluring voices. Odysseus plugs his sailors' ears with wax so he can't listen, so they can't listen to the voices of these sirens as the ship goes past, because they've got these beautiful voices, but when somebody comes close to them to sort of go closer to the source of this voice, these sirens kill and destroy the individuals. Odysseus experiences it by getting lashed to the mast so he can't move, but he doesn't have the wax in his ear, so he can listen to the song of the sirens, but without getting sort of drawn onto their island and destroyed. If there's anything you'd want to add to that, Rebecca?
Yeah, the thing that struck me about the sirens is one of the ways that they lure people is they know everything. So they can tell you anything that you want to know. So they're going to Odysseus, you know, we know exactly what happened at Troy. We can tell you what happened to everybody. We can tell you why it happened. And I thought that is possibly, it's a bit like getting lost in a search engine. You know, you do one Google search and then you think, oh, yeah, another thing. And then you go down this rabbit hole of things which have absolutely nothing to do with what you're trying to learn about. And it goes on and on and on and on. And that's perhaps what the sirens do.
I can imagine that more than a song that's so alluring, that actually knowledge and more knowing more and more stuff could be alluring in a way that maybe a song isn't. That's really interesting. So how does that apply to virtual reality then, or your experience of virtual reality then, Dom?
As I was going through my individual learnings, you know, if you like, sort of dipping into VR, I'd go into an app and then I would come out of it and take some notes so that I remembered what I experienced. So it ended up as a kind of captain's log, if you like, of the journey. And as I went through that, I was looking at, you know, what's the closest parallel of that would be applicable for sirens. And Rebecca, you talk about sort of getting lost in Google. I mean, you one of the things about the web is you can get lost in search, something like that. So I was pointed towards a game store called Steam, which I'm sure some people would be quite familiar with. And I was looking for things on climate change. And I ended up, for some reason, stumbling across something that really troubled me. It was called VR Secretary, and there was a trailer that played out about 30 seconds as I was going past it. And in this particular trailer, the player got to be a CEO who would essentially take advantage of their secretary in this virtual experience. And it was quite a shocking thing to encounter when I think about how terrible that would be in the real world. But it was also kind of instructive in a way for a couple of things. So one is the sort of gendered development of the medium as well. This could only really be something that could apply to perhaps young, under-socialized boys in that particular context who wouldn't consider it as an inappropriate app to use on an app store like that. The other thing that reminded me as well is how certain salacious industries take advantage of emerging media as they come through. So I think when the Gutenberg press first came out, long before there was the complete works of Shakespeare run on a printing press, you had more, shall we say, salacious texts that were some of the earliest ones that were printed. And you can tell I'm choosing my language quite carefully here, but it was an instructive but quite a shocking thing to encounter as well.
And the same's true of video. It was like video movies were driven by the porn industry for quite a while. And, you know, that's where the money was and that's what drove the technology. So, yeah, when we were looking at Second Life as a virtual world, social virtual world, the number of students I had refused to have anything to do with it because of news items about what it was being used for, people to have affairs or for pornography and things like that. Now, they might have been using that as an excuse to not end up doing a new activity they didn't want to do, but there was a lot of perspective that that's what it was about and that it was something that they wanted to avoid because of this. So, yeah, that's definitely the siren call of the dodgy stuff that emerges when a new technology. So how do we stop our students' ears to that sort of stuff? Do we talk about putting safeguards and boundaries on things? Rebecca, you worked in a teen project, but there was a teen grid there, wasn't there, that kept it all at arm's
length? There was a teen Second Life, which was sort of quite closely controlled, and only certain people were allowed on it. You know, you had to have clearance to go on it if you weren't a teenager. And, you know, there was certain textures you couldn't upload and there were certain animations you couldn't animate. And that worked in our specific zone of it. As an adult, we couldn't go anywhere else in Teen Second Life. So I don't know how well it worked elsewhere. It clearly wasn't a sound business model because it closed down after a couple of years.
It does quite clearly make the case for strong guardrails in the use of particular apps that you choose, or, you know, letting your students roam too freely across virtual spaces, that sort of stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.